Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki, ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki, Jai Om Vishnupada Paramahansa Par Ajakacharya Astutarasata Sri Sriman, The Divine Grace Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki, Harinam Sankirtan Ki, Nithai Gaur Primanandi, Glories to the Assembled Devotees, Glories to the Assembled Devotees, Glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. My voice is not at all strong this morning, so if you can probably listen up real close, because I don't have any voice power at all today. I'll try to speak loud, but I'll be a little strained. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Continuation with the reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. This chapter is entitled The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Text 169. Jivera Nistar Lagi Sutta Koila Vyas Mayavadi Basse Suni Hoya Sarvanas. Translation. Srila Vyasadeva presented the Vedanta philosophy for the deliverance of the conditioned souls. But if one hears the commentary of Sankaracharya, everything is spoiled. So why is that? If he presented it for the deliverance of the conditioned souls, but at the same time it says if one hears this commentary, everything is spoiled. So it appears to be a contradiction. Why is that? Who's the Panditjis out there? The Panditjihis. Panditjinis. It's the translation from the verse. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking. Srila Vyasadeva presented the Vedanta philosophy for the deliverance of the conditioned souls. But if one hears the commentary of Sankaracharya, everything is spoiled. Spoiled.
Shankaracharya's commentary is not compared with Vyasadeva.
Right.
Therefore, it is unauthorized.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Srila Vyasadeva is the authorized commentary on Vedanta Sutra, not Sankaracharya, whose teachings are widespread. Purport. Factually, the devotional service of the Lord is described in Vedanta Sutra, but the Mayavadi philosophies, the Sankarites, prepared a commentary known as Sarira Bhashya, in which the transcendental form of the Lord is denied. The Mayavadi philosophers think that the living entity is identical with the Supreme Soul, Brahman. Their commentaries on Vedanta Sutra are completely opposed to the principles of devotional service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore warns us to avoid these commentaries. If one indulges in hearing Sankarai Sarirak Bhashyam, he will certainly be bereft of all knowledge. The ambitious Mayavadi philosophers desire to merge into the existence of the Lord, and this may be accepted as Sahuja Mukti. However, this form of mukti means denying one's individual existence. In other words, it's a kind of spiritual suicide. This is absolutely opposed to the philosophy of bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga offers immortality to the individual's conditioned soul. If one follows the Mayavadi philosophy, he misses his opportunity to become immortal after giving up the material body. The immortality of the individual person is the highest perfectional stage a living entity can attain. So we see here, it's quite interesting, that the Mayavadi philosophers and the impersonalists void out one's existence. Now, we also have a similar philosophy. We say that this existence in this material world is not our real purpose of existence. We are simply play-acting in the different roles and acting out our desires to become happy in this material world. Therefore, it's all a false form of activity. That is called Maya. So everything the conditioned soul does in the material world is meant for their defeat. So the Mayavadi philosophers are correct in the sense that all material activities are ultimately self-defeating. So therefore, let me void out all material activities and let me void out my existence as an individual, because my existence as an individual also seems to be a problem. I have problems because I exist. And if I didn't exist, I wouldn't have any problems. So therefore, let me merge into the effulgence of the Lord, or merge out my existence, and therefore, by merging into the Lord, I will have no more problems. I cease to exist as an individual anymore. So, what do people do every day that is symbolic of this kind of consciousness? And sometimes they do that practically every day in order to mitigate the modes of material energy. Actually, they do two things that are pretty much similar to this type of activity. Yes? You're the only one in that corner, yeah?
Huh?
Yes, you? Just regular, ordinary people have a similar type of activity, which is synonymous in meaning to this voiding out one's existence. What is that activity?
Suicide,
but that's not exactly what I was thinking. This is people do it every day.
Well,
that's a subtler form of that. I'm talking about a more grosser form of What do people do every day to void out their existence? Because sleep. Yeah, sleep. People take shelter of sleep. Why? Because they're miserable. They don't like their existence, so sleep is a way to stop one's mere material miseries. Well, let me go to sleep. Therefore, you see, the average person in the material world sleeps between what? 8, 9, 10, sometimes up 12 hours. So Prabhupada said sometimes they are waking up at noontime. You remember the days before you were a devotee? They'd sleep. But a devotee, it says 6 hours is max. And because his Krishna consciousness is so nice that one wants to use all one's time in serving the Lord. And so one tries to minimize sleep to what is actually necessary to keep body and soul together in order to function effectively in our devotional service. It's not a means, as the karmis see it, as a means for somehow stopping the cessation of material activities. But when you get up, you're back into your similar situation again. There's another form of activity which is also synonymous with that kind of suicide, which is more of an illegal activity, and that is taking drugs or taking alcohol. These are also ways of voiding out one's forms of suffering and misery. But what that does is that it only increases one's suffering and misery in so many different ways. We don't need to explain that. But this is the resort that persons who have no fund of knowledge how to solve their problems of life accept these shelters, such as sleep and intoxications, as forms of stopping their existence because they're miserable. Devotees are not miserable. Devotees are happy. So therefore, they're trying to serve Krishna more and more. Okay. So this philosophy, this Mayavadi philosophy, is very, very dangerous. Very dangerous. Parinamavara Vyasa Sutraya Samata Achinta Shakti Ishvara Jagarupa Parinata. The Vedanta Sutra aims at establishing that the cosmic manifestation has come into being by the transformation of the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mani Iyache Avikrite Prasabe Hema Bara Jagarupa Hoi Ishvara Tabu Avigara. The touchstone, after touching iron, produces volumes of gold without being changed. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests himself as the cosmic manifestation by his inconceivable potency, yet he remains unchanged in his eternal transcendental form. This is a long purport. According to the commentary of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the purpose of the Janma Asya verse in the Vedanta Sutra is to establish that the cosmic manifestation is the result of the transformation of the potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So who knows what verse that is in Srimad Bhagavatam? 1:1:1. It's the first verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. Janma Yasya Yataha. The Supreme Lord is the master of innumerable eternal energies which are unlimited. Sometimes these energies are manifest and sometimes they are not. In any case, all energies are under his control. Therefore, he is the original energetic, the abode of all energies. A common brain in a conditioned state cannot conceive of how these inconceivable energies abide in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how he exists in his innumerable forms as the master of both spiritual and material energies, how he is the master of both manifest and potential powers, and how contradictory potencies can abide in him. As long as the living entity is within this material world, in the condition of illusion, he cannot understand the activities of the inconceivable energies of the Lord. Thus the Lord's energies, though factual, are simply beyond the power of the common brain to understand. When the atheistic philosophers of the Mayavadis, being unable to understand the inconceivable energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, imagine an impersonal void, their imagination is only the counterpart of materialistic thinking. Within the material world, there is nothing inconceivable. High-thinking philosophers and scientists can tackle the material energy, but not being able to understand the spiritual energy, they can simply imagine an inactive state, such as impersonal Brahman. This is simply the negative side of material life. By such imperfect knowledge, the Mayavadi philosophers conclude that the cosmic manifestation is a transformation of the Supreme. Thus, they must necessarily also accept the theory of the illusion of the Supreme, Vaivartavada. However, if we accept the inconceivable potencies of the Lord, we can understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead can appear within the material world without being touched or contaminated by the three modes of material nature. From the Shastras, we learn that there is a stone or jewel called a touchstone that can transform iron into gold. Although the touchstone turns iron into gold many times, it remains in its original condition. If such a material stone can maintain its inconceivable energy after producing volumes of gold, certainly the Supreme Personality of Godhead can remain in his original Sat-Chit-Ananda form after creating the cosmic world. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9:10, he acts only through his different energies, Maya Dakshena Prakriti. Krishna directs the material energy, and that potency works in this material world. This is also confirmed in Brahma Samhita. So who knows that verse in Brahma Samhita? Somebody who's not looking at the purport. He acts only through his different energies, Maya Dakshena Prakriti. Krishna directs the material energy, and that potency works in this material world. This is also confirmed in Brahma Samhita. Who knows who's the Brahma Samhita scholars here? Maya That's close, but that's not the verse. Srishti stiti palaya sarana sati eka cha eva yasha bhuvanati vibharti duga echana rupa api yasha cha jetate sa govindam aripurusham tamaham bhajami. The Durga Shakti, that is material energy, acts under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the universal creation, maintenance and destructions are being carried out by Durga Shakti. Krishna's direction is in the background. The conclusion is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead remains as He is, even though directing His energy, which makes the diverse cosmic manifestation work so wonderfully. So what is, who knows the meaning of the word Chayeva? Shadow. Means, right? Shadow? Chaya? Means shadow. So this material world is like a shadow reflection of the spiritual world. And it's being conducted by the energy of the Lord known as Durga Devi. But in the background, whom Krishna is ultimately the controller of Durga. So behind Durga's energy and power and manifestations, and the supreme power is there, and that is Krishna. So Durga is getting her energy and her ability to illusion the conditioned souls from Krishna. That's why it says that Durga, she's not very happy with her job. You ever get a service you don't like? That happens a lot sometimes. You get something you do, you don't. Durga has a service she doesn't like all the time. Why? Durga Devi is actually, she's a devotee of God. She's a pure devotee. But what is her, and what is her function? She has to bewilder the conditioned souls to make them think that this material world is a nice place. She has to keep the conditioned souls in illusion. She has to create scenarios by which the conditioned soul continually thinks that I can be happy in this material world. That is Durga Devi's service. And that's why Prabhupada used to say, Maya is like a magician. Any of you really seen any really first-class magicians? You've seen Shankar? Really good magicians. There's two kinds of magicians. There's the...
David Coverton?
Coverton. He's good, huh? He's expert with illusions, huh? He did. He made the Statue of Liberty disappear. Just see. The power of Maya. Honey, wow. That's really powerful. But there's two kinds of magicians. I guess he's the best kind. There's two kinds. You've seen that sometimes these magicians, they have their hat, and then they pull a rabbit out of the hat. Or what else is they do? Or they have some coins and they can just make the coins appear. Well, there's the bogus magicians who have a little compartment in the hat. Nobody can see the compartment sitting, you know. And the hat, the rabbit comes out of that little compartment. And then they have these coins, they have them up their sleeve and then they just move their arm a certain way and this coin just manifests. They're just, you know, they're not third-rate magician. But a real magician, he can actually manifest material energy in such a way as to make a rabbit appear within a hat, to make a coin actually appear. And there are yogis who can do that. It's called prapti siddhi, bringing the material energy from one place to another place. It's very powerful. So therefore, ultimately, Maya is a magician. What is the power of Maya? Just imagine Maya's power. So Durga Devi, she's in charge of this material energy. And her service to the Supreme Lord is to keep the conditioned souls in illusion by her magician, by her magic acts, of making the conditioned soul think that yes, there is happiness here. That is the greatest of all illusions. It's called Maya Sukhaya, that somehow or other I can find happiness in this material world. That's the number one illusion. And that's why happiness in the material world is called maya sukaya. It's called the illusion of happiness, or the desire to achieve something that doesn't exist. That is maya. That's why this material energy is called illusory, in the sense that it's real. There's no question this material energy is real. You can touch it, you can feel it, you can twist it, you can manipulate it in so many different ways. But the illusion about the material energy is it explains that it cannot provide what it appears to provide. It looks like one thing, but it's something else. That is the illusion. So one who has transcendental knowledge, he can see through the illusions and go right to the essence, that ultimately this material world is ultimately Krishna's energy, and it's meant to be used in Krishna's service. Then that energy, which is illusionary, becomes a source of connecting that person with Krishna. Where that same energy, when it's seen separate from Krishna as a source of one's enjoyment, brings that person away from Krishna and into the modes of ignorance and passion. So that is the understanding of maya. Okay, so these are some points. Any questions on anything in this section here? Yes, Mother. Like a what?
Play-Doh.
Play-Doh?
Play-Doh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Even
when you were a kid, they had, Play-Doh was like a sponge
clay
that you fold into so many different forms.
Yeah.
Is it something like
that? That's one example. Play-Doh is Play-Doh. Material energy is more dangerous in the sense that it appears to be something, but it's something different. It's just like if you see smoke, you can see it, right? But if you were to try to grab it, you can even try and reach out and grab it. When you open your hand, what do you have? Nothing. So that's maya. Maya is like trying to grab smoke. You go for it, but there's nothing there. Or you get something different than what it appears to be. Okay. There are many nice examples of the material energy. This particular chapter, entitled The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, is probably one of the most important chapters in all Vaishnava literature to understand the difference between personalism and impersonalism. And this is a discussion between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who is an impersonalist. And here the Lord clearly gives practically all of the philosophical, main philosophical points for personalism, defeating all impersonalism. And Srila Prabhupada, in his purports, expands all these points in a very clear and a very elaborate way. So if you want to learn what is impersonalism, and in relationship to personalism or vice versa, please study this chapter. It's Madhya Lila, chapter 6, Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. If you understand this chapter, you can defeat practically any of the Mayavadis and personal philosophers. All the information is there. Srila Prabhupada put his heart and soul into these purports. Okay. Again, excuse me, my voice is very, very strained this morning. So, try to speak. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 12, Verse 16, entitled Mohini Murti Bewilders Lord Shiva. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tate Ham Darsayashyami Didrikso Surasatama Kaminam Bahu Mantavyam Sankalpa Prabhavodayam Tate ham darsha yishyami. Tate ham darsha yishyami. Dikti didriksho surasattama. Didikso surasattama. Kaminam bahu mantavyam. Kaminam bahu mantavyam sankalpa prabhavodayam sankalpa prabhavodayam tateham darsayishyami didrikso surasattama kaminam bahu mantavyam Sankalpa Prabhavodayam Tateham Darsha Yashyami Didikso Surasattama Kaminam Bahu Mantavyam Sankalpa Prabhavodayam Tat That te unto you, aham I, darsayishyami, shall show, didrikso, desiring of seeing, surasattama, O best of the demigods, kaminam, of persons who are very lusty. Bahu, very much. Mantavyam, an object of adoration. Sankalpa, lusty desires. Prabhava udayam, causing to be strongly aroused. Translation and purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. O best of the demigods, I shall now show you my form that is very much appreciated by those who are lusty. Since you want to see that form, I shall reveal it in your presence. Purport. Lord Shiva's desiring to see Lord Vishnu reveal the most attractive and beautiful form of a woman was certainly a joking affair. Lord Shiva knew that he could not be agitated by any so-called beautiful woman. The daityas may have been bewildered, he thought, but since even the demigods could not be agitated, what to speak of me, who are the best of all demigods? However, because Lord Shiva wanted to see Lord Vishnu's form as a woman, Lord Vishnu decided to impersonate a woman and show him a form that would immediately put him in an ocean of lusty desires. In effect, therefore, Lord Vishnu told Lord Shiva, I will show you my form as a woman, and if you become agitated by lusty desires, do not blame me. The attractive features of a woman are appreciated by those who are affected by lusty desires. But those who are above such desires, who are on the platform of Krishna consciousness, are very difficult to bewilder. Nonetheless, by the supreme desire of the personality of Godhead, everything can be done. This was to be the test of whether Lord Shiva could remain unagitated. Om gyan timirandasya kinajana salakaya chaksu unmilitam yena tasmai shikurave namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Swampadanti Kam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavrindam
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
So here, we're hearing more of this particular pastime wherein Lord Shiva is approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, after he had heard from the devas and the that the Lord manifested himself in such a form in order to bewilder the atheistic demons, to trick them to give up the pot of nectar, and ultimately to provide that pot for the demigods' benefit. Lord Shiva wants to see that form of the Lord. And of course, Srila Prabhupada is somewhat reflecting the consciousness of Lord Shiva here. It's interesting, Prabhupada says in the purport, Lord Shiva's thinking, well, what form can bewilder me? Even the demigods were much lesser than me in transcendental power, were not bewildered by such a form. So what about me? I mean, he is Lord Shiva's, the position of Lord Shiva's. Actually, Lord Shiva is, you know, a manifestation of the energy, of the potency of Lord Krishna. He is, as they say in the Brahma Samhita, if you take milk and you add some little culture, and you get yogurt. You leave it overnight. And what happens? You get something different. But what is yogurt? Yogurt is only milk in a transformed state. So in the same way, Lord Shiva is nothing but Krishna in a more transformed state. And that's all. One time Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture to a person who was very much attached to Lord Shiva. And he said, he was saying, Vishnu to Shiva, Krishna to Shiva is like milk to yogurt. So the man said, well, which one is the milk and which one is the yogurt? So Prabhupada said, Krishna is the milk and Shiva is the yogurt. So Krishna, just imagine how much power and potency is of Lord Shiva. But we see sometimes that Lord Shiva gets implicated by the material energy. He's in charge of the mode of ignorance. And sometimes due to that close association to that mode of ignorance, he becomes trapped by that mode. Here, the Lord is going to, he's thinking, Lord Vishnu's thinking, Lord Shiva cannot be bewildered by any forms in this material world. So what is that form that I can create that will even bewilder this great personality? So it says here that it's a joking affair. Krishna wants to show, he wants to satisfy Lord Shiva by showing that form, but at the same time, there's a very powerful meaning here, that whatever Krishna wants to do, it can be done. Krishna's power is the supreme power of all powers. There's no power greater than Krishna. If Krishna wants to bewilder someone, then that person will become bewildered, no matter who they are. And if Krishna wants to reveal something to that person will understand something by his potency and mercy. Krishna is the power of all powers. There's no power greater than Krishna. And there's nothing that Krishna cannot do in any situation. That's why he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He controls everything down to his ultimate. So if he wants to create a form that will bewilder Lord Shiva, he will. And you'll see in the next few verses, he comes up with that Vishnu Maya, which makes Lord Shiva look quite ridiculous. And we'll go into that pastime a little later on, as it's explained. But here it also explains that Prabhupada's giving some instructions for the conditioned souls. And that in this material world, Maya is very powerful. No question, Maya is powerful. When Krishna was in Vrindavan, and the cowherd boys were playing with Krishna in Vrindavan, one powerful snake, a demon in the form of a snake named Agasura, came in order to capture Krishna and the cowherd boys and to try to kill them. This demon was doing it in a revengeful way. His sister was Putana witch. His brother was Bakasura, who were also the big demons that were killed by Krishna. So he wanted to get even and revenge his brother and sister's death by trying to kill Krishna. So he manifested himself in this very powerful, huge snake. It's explained that his from the lower jaw of the snake to the top of his upper jaw, when he opened his mouth, it was 8 miles high. Can you imagine? 8 miles high? Airplanes only fly, what, a mile and a half up, maybe, at most. Some of the higher jets go maybe 2 or 3 miles up, or maybe more. Imagine. So he wasn't an ordinary snake. So he opened his mouth when he saw the cowherd boys and Krishna playing in Vrindavan. And the cowherd boys were thinking, oh, just see, look at that snake. And some were saying, maybe it's a cave. No, it's a snake. Let's go run inside. No, we better not. Don't worry, Krishna saved us. He saved us before, he'll save us again. And they were all thinking like that. So they all ran into the mouth of this snake. And then Krishna, at that particular time, he was looking away. He was diverted. His attention was diverted. But then he realized what was happening. So he looked and he saw what was happening. Krishna became bewildered. Can you imagine that? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the master, he's called Yogeshwara. He's the master of all mystics. He can create any kind of mystic potency. Just like this morning, we were seeing the mystic power of Krishna. And did you, all of you, notice the mystic power of Krishna this morning? Did anybody notice? It was very, very prominent. I guess the pujaris know the mystic. They all know what I'm talking about. And Krishna dressed himself in half the time he usually dresses himself. We were all somewhat behind in changing our clocks this morning. So it was 5 o'clock, but to the world it was 6 o'clock. So we're thinking everyone is coming in 1 hour. So the pujari said, we'll try hard. Of course, we give all credit to the pujaris. They not only got the altar open in 1 hour, but the deities looked so beautiful and so spectacular that it looked like there was so much time, care, and attention taken to Krishna's dressing, like any other day of 2 hours. So we give credit to the pujaris, of course, for their devotion and efforts. But we also see that Krishna had some desire to fulfill, that he wanted to be on time. He showed his mystic potency in that way. So we had an exhibition of Krishna's mystic power today. Of course, the pujaris were probably in a little bit of anxiety during that time, but it was a wonderful display of devotion, and of course the altar looks so beautiful, as it always does. So when Krishna looked, he saw all the cowherd boys running into the mouth, and it says Krishna became bewildered. But why is that particular statement made there, that Krishna became bewildered? No one can bewilder Krishna. But Krishna acted in such a way as to become bewildered. Why? To show the power of Maya. And that the conditioned souls think, no problem. I can manipulate the material energy in such a way as to get the results that I want. But Maya is so strong. Shristi Stiti, she can create, she can destroy. That's that verse. Shristi Stiti Palaya Sadat. What is it? No. Stipalaya. She creates maintenance, he also destroys. Maya is so powerful. So no one can overcome the power of Maya. And Maya's potencies are two. There's one potency is called covering, and one potency is called throwing. The covering potency and the throwing potency work to cover the conditioned souls and make them forget about their relationship with God. So Maya throws one outside of their relationship with Krishna and makes them forget that relationship and creates an atmosphere of reality that ultimately is something different than the reality. This is Maya. This is Maya. Just like we look at the forms of this world, but are the forms real? They're always changing. They're always changing. Therefore, the material energy is always by nature mutable. What appears at one time appears in a different way at another time. The same energy. The young, beautiful young girl or man in their early age, what happens? The body gets old. The body gets worn out. The body gets diseased. And the body starts to break down. So what was so attractive in one time becomes a source of quite another kind of consciousness. People are so much attached to the forms of this world that they base their whole life upon what they see. They say seeing is believing. There was one famous movie star. Maybe some of you remember her. Her name was Brigitte Bardot. You all remember Brigitte Bardot? And some of the older folks here a little. Brigitte Bardot was a very, very attractive French actress. And she was very much enthusiastic in her display of her bodily forms. But at one point in her life, she started to notice the effects of old age started to come in. She noticed some wrinkles and some effects of old age. What happened to her? She became so much overwhelmed by the reality that I'm no longer as beautiful as I was and I'm getting old. She stopped appearing in public. She was so much attached to the idea that people love me for my body, and now my body is no more becoming attractive as it used to be. So she stopped appearing. She was shocked. She actually couldn't even believe that, you know, this was happening to her. The illusion becomes so strong that when something appears for one time in our life, and then we realize it's something different after so many years, it becomes a very traumatic experience for many people. Sometimes people are so rich, but then due to some change in the material energy, then all of a sudden they lose their money. In 1929, in 1930 in America, the stock market crashed. It was one of the biggest crashes in the history of American stock exchange. And thousands of people lost large sums of money. And what they were doing, they were committing suicide. This was common practice where people were jumping out windows. Really, this was the newspapers, the headlines, and people were committing suicide right and left because they had lost their fortune. So what appears to be a source of happiness and a source of reality in one point, due to the influence of time, presents itself in a complete opposite way. And that is Maya. That is Maya. And therefore, the conditioned soul, the living entity, should not try to find happiness in something temporary. There's no happiness in this material world that is temporary. It's always changing. It's always changing. But what doesn't change is that our relationship with the Supreme Personality of God. Actually, that does change. It does change, but it gets better. It changes for the better. Maya changes for the worst. The best situation is the beginning. The man and woman fall in love at the beginning of their relationship. It's so nice. Then after a while, what happens? So many problems, arguments, fights, divorce, you know. People get tired of each other. They look for somebody else. Right? This is the scenario in the world. It gets old. You know, the nice car, after a few years, let me get a new one. Right? They get so enthusiastic. Oh, this record, this music is so nice. After a few days, or they use it for a disc, throw it. So everything in this material world, when it initially presents itself to our life, it appears to be very nice. That's Maya. We're attracted to something. And we engage our hopes, our desires, our aspirations, our energies into this. And what happens? We find that it's something else than what actually... Maya means disappointment. That's what Maya means. It means hope and then disappointment. Or what is called hankering and lamentation. We have high hopes, but ultimately it never lives up to that. So the best situation in the material world for the conditioned soul is that they accept that they have to accept the fact that it's not what I want, but that's what can I do? I can't change it, so let me accept misery as reality. But a devotee, he knows that actually even from the beginning of one's relationship with Maya in different forms, it's also miserable. Why? Because that diverts one's attention from Krishna. And by diverting our attention from Krishna, it means that we enter into an area of illusion. So ultimately, one has to see Maya.